This week's episode was brought to you by the generous support of listeners like you. If you enjoy the Whole Rabbit podcast and would like to help support the show, hear the extended episodes, or just appease the large emerald lepus, please visit www.patreon.com/thewholerabbit, where your monthly donation of just $5 gets you not just access to our entire library of extended shows available in convenient RSS feed format compatible with your podcast player of choice, but I'll also send you a high-quality, deluxe gourmet 5x5 vinyl sticker of our Baphometic bunny cover art. And if that's not enough to keep you pounding mochi for the moon until midnight, I'll even send you the secret keys to our Discord server, where creators and fans of the show collaborate in real time about lycanthropic, lagomorphic liches looping lit lyrical limericks luxuriously. Who is Satan? Is he merely a symbol or something more? While many Satanists from past and present maintain that Satan is nothing more than a pleasing aesthetic for antinomian worldviews and politics, there are those who believe in a literal devil and worship it pridefully. But who is this devil? Journey with us back to ancient Egypt to find out Satan's ancient origins and, surprisingly, what exactly it has to do with ass. Donkeys, that is. Thank you, everybody, and enjoy the show. What did you just say?
A bunch of samurais and cholos on the solar bark that's looks like a lowrider.
That's the new Hideo Kojima game, right?
Like in modern times, it's just the lowrider draws lowrider through the duat, not the solar bark. It's been updated. What are you doing with the pillow?
I'm going to yell very loudly, so...
Oh, dampening. Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Whole Rabbit, where we don't just satisfy ourselves with telling you the high priest of the Temple of Set was involved with military intelligence at levels considered above top secret, and more than likely knows above a shadow of a doubt exactly what spiritual black dimension the Zeta Reticulae overlords are from. Nay, we slip out of the Lily sensory deprivation tank when nobody's looking, steal the key to the UFO mothership, and transport ourselves back to ancient Egypt as a form of transdimensional two-factor authentication to determine once and for all if Michael Aquino was truly in contact with Osiris's murderous brother, because this week we're discussing the ancient Egyptian Neturu, Set, the mysterious red god of chaos, storms, and the desert. I'm your host, Luke Madrid, the Hack Rabbit. I'm joined this week by the goat of Mendes himself, Malachor V. Ah. And the tattooed lady of the temple, Heka Astra.
Hello.
Whoa, dog. Where's Mari? Mari! Mari!
Where's Mari?
She's, I'm feeling her. She's contacting me from the astral realm. She's,
Oh, good.
She's leading, she's fulfilling her duty as Queen of the Fae and, at war in the astral realm for the greater good of all dogs and humans alike.
I believe
a noble deed.
Is everybody ready to talk about Satan for a few episodes? Like, really?
Yeah.
Really get into Satan. Really scorch our fingertips with the black flame. Get smelly with the brimstone. Do Satanists even believe in Satan? If you were to ask the Satanic Bible by Anton LaVey, the answer would be no. Even today, a cursory glance at opinion polls show that while a diminishing number of people still happily profess a belief in a god or higher power, an even smaller percentage profess a belief in the devil. Yet for others, the two are inextricably linked. As sure as there is a god, there must be a devil. After all, people rarely seek Jesus Christ to save them from taxes, having to pay child support, or even death. No. First, there must exist a belief, if only first expressed as primal fear of a devil or a hell from which to be saved. Even in popular culture, while the masses scoff at Kanye West or Snoop Dogg's material dedicated to Jesus, they rush and swoon and scream over Lil Nas X's giving Satan a lap dance or Travis Scott trancing out while his audience tramples each other. After all, everybody knows that if you want earthly power, fame, and success, you have to sell your soul to the devil. Likewise, you don't see Sabrina the Teenage Witch or little demon conjuring up her power from Yeshua or Yehovah Shah, Asher Ehie, or Benny Elohim. They get it from Satan, who in the case of Little Demon is voiced by Danny DeVito. But if Satanists don't believe in Satan, who does? For Anton LaVey, It's fine to appropriate Christian symbolism to provide an aesthetic to a generic moral philosophy about life, but good luck explaining that to true believers. Even to followers of Anton LaVey in the Church of Satan, this explanation eventually failed to satisfy the lurking, sinking suspicion that the energies, forces, and powers invoked during a proper satanic ritual were purely imagined, with its effects relegated to the psychological dimension alone. In fact, so dissatisfying was the purely atheistic explanation of Satan that psychological operations officer Michael Aquino would gather up many of Anton LaVey's former priesthood and create the Temple of Set, which, contrary to the Church of Satan, did profess a literal belief in the devil. Rather than continuing to champion the anti-god boogeyman of Judeo-Christian mythology, Set from the ancient Egyptian pantheon of Neturu was chosen instead. While this may have miffed Anton LaVey, it was indisputable proof to both the faithful and conspiracy theorists everywhere that there was something truly sinister going on at the highest levels of government. But who, and maybe more importantly, what, is Set? Is Set really the devil? Our story begins a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
The history of Set in Egypt is a bit murky and hard to pin down to absolute truths, but what can be said is that he went through a series of changes throughout ancient times. So I'm going to go through the history of Set in Egypt throughout the ages, and hopefully it'll shed some much-needed light on who Set really is. He's most well-known for being the murderer of his brother Osiris, an adversary to Horus and the protector of Ra against Apophis, the serpent of chaos. However, he wasn't always so well defined in his role alongside the other Neturu of Egypt, and there certainly were changes to his role as time went on. So I'm going to go through the history of Set throughout the eras in Egypt, starting at the very beginning of what we do know, so we can kind of untangle the mess that it is. It's most likely that Set's role in the Osirian mythology comes from a time in pre-dynastic and early dynastic Egypt, where there were struggles for a unification of Upper and Lower Egypt. And I think it's important to note that the state, religions, and cult centers throughout Egypt's history are not indicative of the people's religion, meaning there's a difference. The people's freedom to worship in their homes, whichever god they connected to most, was not necessarily connected to the state religion or cult center's specific deity, as they often differed. So cult centers were often focused on deities important to the local powers and the priesthoods. Conclusions as to who exactly Set was in pre-dynastic Egypt prior to 3100 BC remains entirely speculative, since there simply isn't enough data to say anything for certain. But that said, there are some artifacts that can give us some semblance of an idea. Some Bedarian models of hippopotami dating from 5500 to 4000 BC have been given associations to Set in the form of a hippopotamus. During this period, there also appears to have been significant mother goddess worship, where she was typically identified as a cow. And then there's also like canine protectors of tombs from this time that also prevailed throughout Egypt's spiritual and political evolutions. And some later evidence from 4000 to 3500 BC shows Amration models depicting hippopotami being harpooned by a figure. The hippopotamus and crocodiles as symbolic representations of Set, those were long-lasting associations with Set. So some scholars think that that's an early depiction of him in the form of a hippo.
I thought this was interesting because Taweret is a hippo goddess, and she's a protector, I think, of children and childbirth.
Yeah, her association is very clearly with childbirth and motherhood, and she's considered one of Set's wives, like a Set aspect of the mother goddess that is pretty scary. So
yeah, I guess hippos eat people.
Yeah, for a long time, I think even to this day, I think hippos have the highest kill rate or kill count of humans per year. And in grand total, pachyderms, period. Rhinos, elephants, hippos, they have the highest kill count on humans every year. It's a weird thing. They're very scary animals, thick-skinned. I also find it interesting that Taweret and Set have like a relationship because Set is also a god of chaos, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the waters of Nun would represent that primordial chaos, and that would be something related to Set in terms of like this primal, very untamed energy, and a hippo would be swimming in that because a hippo could handle that. It's okay in that chaotic waters of Nun, and
it swallows you, man.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah, they're kind of like microcosmic expressions of that chaos. lot of like wicked, spooky, aggressive animals are often associated with Set. There is also ivory combs from this period that are assumed to have the earliest depictions of the Set animal on them, but they're missing the iconic raised tail of the Set animal, so they kind of just look like donkeys. And we didn't have a very clear association with Set and donkeys yet, but, you know, it might be evidence. Given the sparsity, though, of evidence from this period, it's impossible to say if Set was a chief god collectively or not. What we do know is that by 3500 BC, sun worship and divine representations of animals appear to have already been established. You've got sun worship and you've also got wilderness worship. So you end up having different cities worshiping different aspects of nature, essentially. The worship of Horus appears to have become more popular in Hierakonpolis. Then it was known as...
I'm sorry. Okay, hold on. Let's try this again. Hierakonpolis.
No, wait, there's no opolis.
No.
Hierakonpolis.
Wow. Hierakonpolis.
Hierakonpolis.
Here come the police.
That's what it sounds like after we keep saying it. I was like, here comes the police. I'm like, what?
The worship of Horus appears to have become more popular in Hierakonpolis. Then it was known as Nekhen, the city of the hawk. It became a large center of worship for Horus, which brings us to the question of rivalry and unification. We know there's different factions, they have different cult centers, different lifestyles, and they've all selected images associated to their lifestyles. So some important artifacts to take into account around this period are the Narmer palette and the Narmer mace head, which are from 3100 BC, and the Scorpion mace head from 3200 to 3000 BC. So the Scorpion mace head from the Scorpion King, who was before Narmer, the Scorpion mace head is the first verifiable depiction of Set as a Set animal. It clearly depicts the Set animal on the tops of the third and the fifth standards. There's multiple standards, and each of them depict images of presumably local gods, and from each of those standards dangles a bird hung by the neck, which is most likely a lapwing, and it symbolizes common Egyptian people. So it would be like the common Egyptian people from those areas have been, like, defeated, presumably.
Wow. Getting strung up like chickens.
If you take a look at the Scorpion mace head in the top part of it, you can see this. They're literally birds hanging from their neck from nooses, and you can see two little Set animals on them. Anyways, so the figure of the king scorpion on the mace head, it clearly shows him wearing the white crown of Upper Egypt. However, because of the poor shape of the fragments, it's also been suggested that a possible second figure depicting him in a red crown of Lower Egypt may have been present as well. So it's possible that this mace head was making a commentary on an actual event where forceful domination of local areas and their gods took place under one ruler. Though, without more data, we're still left just speculating.
Now you can see the little Set animal, quote-unquote, up where the bird is hanging. What is that thing? It's like a wacky dog. It's basically the donkey from Shrek.
It kind of looks like a donkey and a jackal, or an African wild dog. Because African wild dogs are known to, like, raise their tails when they're being aggressive. So,
like, if a donkey and a dragon made a baby.
Well, we know...
Well, you know, dragons must like ass, you know? Donkeys are ass. That's what we can say. These Egyptians had asses on the top of their standards, and they hung chickens around
their
asses.
They're not chickens. They're lapwings.
Yardbird.
Wepawet's on there too. He's on one of the standards right next to a Set animal.
Yeah, but we know what Wepawet is. He a wolf.
He's definitely a wolf. So we know for sure that Set is not a wolf.
I think it's okay. Because I'm going to talk about some stuff later, but I think it's very interesting that there's even a question on what kind of animal this is.
Me too.
Like, oh, we don't know. Because maybe they don't want you to know exactly what it is.
It's a wabbit.
It would mess everything up.
I mean, the confusing part is that the artifacts that have donkeys on them from this period, when it's clearly a donkey, it doesn't have a raised tail. So what's with the raised tail on the scorpion mace head?
You see, Set is like an onion, has layers.
And who's the ogre here? Man, the devil, huh? It's just, Shrek is just talking about the devil.
The outsider.
Donkey stuff. Yeah. Do we have to do a Shrek episode now?
No.
No.
So the other two artifacts that I mentioned, the Narmer palette and the Narmer mace head, Narmer was the king portrait on those, and he was possibly the successor of Scorpion. So the Narmer palette absolutely does show a stronger motif towards the unification of Upper and Lower Egypt under Narmer's rule, and he's considered to be the first king depicted wearing the crowns of both Upper and Lower Egypt. So the Narmer artifacts, they're dated from around 3100 BC.
So Set worship goes back at least 5,000 years.
Yeah. Verifiable, yes. So Set, he was originally worshipped in Kom Ombos, which was known as Nubet. Nubet means the city of gold, and it was named for its rich gold mines. Nubet was the principal pre-dynastic center in Upper Egypt, and it seems to have lost its prominent position by 3050 BC during the unification of Egypt over several rulerships. So the first actual mention that we have of Set in sacred texts comes from the pyramid texts, and in the pyramid text, Set was called Set of Nubet, since he was regarded as the chief god of Nubet and the desert and its gold mines that were in that area. And the pyramid texts, they're the oldest sacred texts from Egypt, and they date from 2400 to 2300 BC.
The great golden god of Nubet.
I like that the OG Satan was gold.
If you think about the difference between Upper Egypt and then, like, as you go further, because Upper Egypt is actually in the south and Lower Egypt is actually in the north. It's called Upper and Lower because the Nile flows southward. So Upper Egypt is up the Nile, which is to the south, and Lower Egypt is down the Nile, which is further north. So it gets,
yeah, because the Nile starts in the south, up in the, like, where Kilimanjaro mountain ranges and Lake Victoria, all that. The Green Nile, the White Nile, it's like some of the craziest kayaking rivers you can find on the planet. Goes through all that alchemy, and then it opens up into, like, a giant fat mouth. And there's, like, one part where all that water comes through, like, less than 15 inches of space between these two rocks. I forgot where it is, but all of the water that goes into Egypt passes through this 15-inch gap. It's kind of insane. But then it opens up to, like, this fat-ass river that would flood and have fucking crocodiles and hippos. And that region is up on top of a plateau, like a large elevated piece of land, and it flows downward, which is towards the north into the Mediterranean. So it's one of the only rivers in the world that's really long that does that.
So Nubet, the city of Nubet, it was, like, pretty far south. It's really south in Egypt. And doing mining work is really, really hard work. And a lot of the areas there were not, like, huge agricultural centers, like, a little further down.
It's not as hard as working at Starbucks during a rush, though.
So, like, the people in that area, it's a really hard life to work the mines. I think they related a lot more to, like, aggressive animals, strong animals, and, like, they tended to lean towards that kind of symbolism, and it was also more related to the desert as well, as opposed to, like, the agricultural, you know, greenery of growing that you would find lower down. And it's also, Kom Ombos it's in the Nakata region. Nakata itself is a little bit further up, but it's the same region. They're kind of like two little townships. And then Nakata is a necropolis center, so you have a lot of burials and stuff going on in that area. So it was pretty prominently, like, desert, hardship, like, you need strong animals to symbolize, like, what kind of energy you're looking to get through your life, right? So there were some differences between the lifestyles of the Upper and Lower Egyptians. So then from the time of the first dynasty, 3100 BC, with King Narmer, who was also known as Menes or Men, up until around the pyramid texts from 2400 to 2300 BC of the Old Kingdom, that's during the fifth dynasty, we have a gap of about 700 to 800 years where we don't exactly know what happened with Set, aside from the fact that he did continue on in some form or another into the pyramid texts. And since the pyramid texts are the oldest sacred texts from Egypt, we don't have a lot to go on other than loose associations.
So there's a lot of mystery there that you can kind of fudge and invent if you are trying to champion Set today.
Well, you have to take into account, too, like, the writing system that they had, it wasn't as advanced yet, right? So they were still developing a comprehensive writing system They weren't using, like, full paragraphs and, like, sentences like you would see later on, like, come Middle Kingdom. They got very elaborate with their language, with their written language. But in the early times, they were still just kind of using, like, you know, this symbol here, this symbol here, this symbol here, and we all know what that means.
Grug-like.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like that. What we can observe in that several centuries long gap, though, is that most kings associated Horus with kingship, and that kingship typically encompassed Upper and Lower Egypt.
All the Egypt.
The Egypt.
Winners win.
So since Nubet was in Upper Egypt in the south, Set was considered a power of the south, and most of his animal associations were of aggressive, earthbound animals, right? And then Horus was considered the power of Lower Egypt in the north and was always portrayed as a falcon, so a sky-flying animal. So at this point, we can kind of assume that political, spiritual, and symbolic associations with the two gods, they were being sorted out. So on the one hand, there was like an earthly god that's aggressive and related to the desert, strong as fuck. And then on the other hand, there's another god that's strong and he's related to like the sky and the sun and like this bigger picture kind of thing. So some interesting things to note were that certain themes of kings and queens during the first dynasty seemed to acknowledge the dualistic natures, and apparently they made attempts to reconcile the two. For example, the queens of the first dynasty, they bore the titles She Who Sees Horus and Set. And then we have the first use of the golden falcon of Horus, which may also imply a unity of the two, considering Set's association with gold.
Oh.
And then when you continue into the second dynasty, which is 2890 to 2686 BC, there's more unrest, rebellions, and civil wars that seem to break out. That leaves us with very little to go off of.
The dichotomy of a beast desert god and a solar sky sun god seems to have repeated itself elsewhere in mythology with Apollo and the Python and Indra and the Asuras. See a lot of the repeating patterns. You know, even in the American political system, you have the donkey and you have the Indra elephant. It's Set versus Indra. We still have this
eagles.
Stuff.
You have a lot of eagles in politics too, or birds.
Golden birds as a symbol of empire.
I'm saying the same thing, dude. I was about to mention liberal donkeys. we should just change it to Set, you know?
You have like Hitler riding an elephant.
Okay, so during the second dynasty, one of the kings named Set Peribson, he used a Set animal to top off his Serik of his name. So this is a Serik is basically a cartouche before the cartouche. It's kind of like a little box that they stuck their name in.
I just saw exhibits.
What?
I heard you like cartouches, so we put a cartouche before your cartouche so you could have more cartouche.
A peach.
I got that bitch a cartouche. Bitches love cartouches. Can I say that? I don't know. Okay, so Set Peribson, he used a Set animal on the top of his Serik. And Peribson was also a king that only appears to be attested to in the south. So he wasn't a unified upper and lower king. He was only attested to in Upper Egypt in the south. And among the funerary items of Set Peribson were statues of other gods as well, such as Min, Bastet, and Ash. So it shows that he didn't worship just Set. And that brings us to the last king of the Second Dynasty, and I think perhaps the most notable evidence for a desire to show reverence for both gods by King Sekhemwy. So originally Sekhemwy, he used the falcon with the white crown of Upper Egypt atop of his Serek, with a name that translated as the power has appeared. And then sometime into his reign, he gained control of northern areas, attempting to unite the country. And then after that point, he changed his name, adding the we to Ka Sekhem, making his name Ka Sekhemwy. And that means the two powers have appeared. And from that point, he topped his Serek with both the Horus falcon and the Set animal together. If you look at his Serek, it kind of looks like a Horus and Set are kissing.
It does. Is this when Set starts to become seen as the complement or second power to Horus?
Yeah, so like Horus was considered like the power of the north and Set was considered like the power of the south, and they were equally considered important. Like you couldn't just say like only Horus matters, or you couldn't say only Set matters, because like if you want to unify Egypt, you have to say they both matter and they're both powerful and they also have different aspects.
So even though Set is strong, bestial, maybe even violent, he's not the personification of all evil, right?
Not yet.
He's mostly a personification of force, like violence, aggressiveness, opposition, and that can either be used positively or negatively. Like, they had a different way of looking at it. So from Casa Kemwe and onwards, the unification of Egypt, it yielded dramatic power increases over the next few dynasties, and that started with the building of the first step pyramid by his son Djoser at Saqqara, and that was at the beginning of the third dynasty. So the imagery from the second through fourth dynasties, they appear to show a large amount of sun worship, and Horus and Set became established as two powers that are necessary for Egypt. So Horus, being a falcon associated with the sky, he naturally had a stronger link with the sun in the heavens, the macrocosmic powers, while Set, his previous association with the desert and aggressive beasts, it translated as the necessity of embracing that power and strength.
The beast.
So since the desert was the red land and Set was always associated with the desert, he continued to be viewed as the red god, and Min or Osiris, being related to fertility, they continued to be related to the black land or the fertile black soil of the Nile. So if you kind of look at it like if all the land along the Nile is Min or Osiris and then all the other is Set. So that's why Set's red. He's a red god.
It makes sense. Black soil, fertile. Golden sands, burn your feet.
Yeah. But with Min and Osiris, because of that association with the black soil, they represented vitality and virility of the king. So the dual manifest nature of reality, it became ingrained in Egyptian culture over centuries, and a kind of compromise was met in upholding Set as a very important god, because this necessary force of strength and violence, it continued to be viewed as a divine aspect of life and nature.
Yeah, the donkey certainly fulfills its role in fulfilling the qualities of the Set energy. If you're thinking about what we're talking about exactly, just think about how a donkey can just hold anything you give it, doesn't fall over really, and they can walk forever pretty much. It's really hard to get them tired.
So this is where Satan becomes red.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
It's considered to be a pretty big influence as to why Satan is red and why he has, like, two horns protruding from his head. That's part of that imagery, because Set is obviously red and has two, like, unidentified horn-looking ear things.
You mean jackrabbit ears?
They look a little bit more like giraffe ears. They have square tips at the top.
Fashion.
Yeah, he clipped his own ears.
Does his own thing.
All right, so from the very earliest mention of Set in sacred texts, that's the pyramid texts, the fifth dynasty and onwards, we see Set referred to as an important god. The Egyptians had an enlightening way of thinking of what we would normally call Satan or evil. So instead, he was viewed as an absolutely necessary strength. Sometimes violent, sometimes a trickster, sometimes unpredictable, sometimes a protector. Often he was considered the strongest, but also most arrogant and egotistical god. But he was still divine and still absolutely important. So the pyramid text shows him in all lights. It has him in positive, neutral, and negative lights. And then the coffin texts do as well. So from the earliest texts, he's described as the murderer of Osiris, which being that he's always been a desert god, that makes sense, right? You can't really grow shit in the desert, and Osiris is related to fertility and vegetation. The desert is infertile. It's also why Set is described as being infertile.
This is also why Osiris is known as a black god.
Yep, when he has black skin, it's not just the black soil, it's also the decomposition, which is also nurturing. It's like compost, right? Compost creates a nourishment for growth. So Set was very heavily associated with the desert, and he continued to be heavily associated with the desert throughout the eras of Egypt. And the desert determinative hieroglyph, it looks like three hills. It's pretty basic looking. It's just like three mounds.
Like, and three juju bees right next to each other.
And it's also used to define a place of the wild animals, or mines, or otherness, wild, foreign, not the Nile Valley, necropolis. It's also the determinative hieroglyph that's used on the head of Ha. He's a desert god. Specifically, he's the desert. Like, he is the desert. And then the god Ash is also related to Set. He's specifically the oasis aspect of Set. And also you have to consider too that the climate in Egypt was changing and there was a continued aridification of Egypt. Like Egypt kept becoming more and more arid. So like the areas in which they could grow crops over time, it was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Egypt had some climate change going on.
It's all Set's fault.
Well, being a desert god, they were like, oh, look, like Set is killing Osiris, right?
Set's killing Osiris!
Mom, Set's being mean to me again.
Set really does remind me of like the base Chad versus the virgin Osiris.
The mythology of the sacred texts, they reflect the infertility of Set and the loss of his testicles during the battle with Horus. So Horus also, he receives some battle damage and the loss of his eye or both of his eyes. And eventually his eyes become associated with the sun and the moon. Those are his eyes, right? One is the sun, one's the moon. So Set's association is also with the West and the desert in the West. And it became associated with where the sun sets because of the Western desert. And then the waning of the moon was said to be Set plucking the eye out of Horus, right? And then the waxing of the moon was related to Thoth healing the eye. So Set was given some associations to the waning moon cycle, and his nose became more curved, reflecting that moon curve, like a crescent.
Got another body modification, because he wanted to.
Well, when you look at the early pictures of Set, his nose isn't nearly as curved, right?
So when people are trying to tell you that you always see them doing the Illuminati eye in the media, where they cover one eye for a photograph, and it's like, oh, that's the Satan eye. Well, it's really the eye of Horus.
Is that the, when you make like that A-OK, like your forefinger to your thumb? Or is that when you just flat cover your eye with your palm?
Just cover your eye with your palm. Illuminati stuff. Although some people say it's associated with Set because they think it's the Satanists teasing Horus for plucking out his eye.
Oh, did it hurt? Oh.
Sounds like a Dark Souls taunt. That'd be a cool taunt in a game. Just like pull your eyeballs out and throw it at the enemy.
So that's why Beyonce does it in photos, etc. And Bill Gates and Jar Jar Binks and whoever.
So Set kept his title of Lord of the Desert and of Faraway Lands. And his strength was associated with storms. And storms were symbolic of like a battle with Horus in the skies. He was considered a necessary creative force of opposition, right? And wildness, violence, chaos. And that it had to be balanced with precision, order, and truth. And the harmony of those principles we know ultimately as Ma'at. Ma'at's been around since the pyramid texts as well. So generally speaking, these themes appear to have continued on through the intermediate period between the Old Kingdom and the Middle Kingdom. The coffin texts from 2100 BC and his depictions on Middle Kingdom reliefs are also evidence of this. But this is still pretty murky though, since simply looking at the text, it doesn't acknowledge the civil rebellions and the rising and declining of the wielding of power changing hands and like the influences that had on people and how they thought of things.
It's like Game of Thrones is going on all the time and they're just being like, mm-mm.
Like there's just like constant, like we're trying to unify Egypt and then there's people like, fuck you.
Like, you know, the Egyptians seem to have had American politics down. It sounds like states fighting, states' rights versus federal.
It would be like constantly dealing with states wanting to separate from America, you know? Like, people keep trying to establish, you know, America as, like, a unified thing that protects everyone. And, like, people can still, like, do their own, can choose your religion and who you worship and blah, blah, blah. But, like, but states keep trying to, like, overthrow the government and, like, separate from America. That's basically what was going on in Egypt for a really long time. Like, during the second intermediate period, central authority appears to have completely broken down.
Woo!
Once more, Egypt became divided into multiple areas, and there's just like petty nobles that held power. And during this time, the 15th dynasty, 1650 to 1550 BC, is when a group known as the Hyksos came to establish a kingdom in the north, and that's specifically in Avaris in the Nile Delta of Lower Egypt.
Is this where we get the word avarice from?
I personally think so, because the Hyksos were kind of like people who were opportunists and they came to power and then it seems as though they kind of got greedy and wanted all of Egypt.
How could you say such mean things about the Hyksos?
Just saying.
Over the ages, a bunch of kingdoms came and sacked all these Egyptian temples and stuff. That's why we can't find any evidence of anything we're trying to explain here.
Yeah, there's a lot of debate with the Hyksos, but there's no conclusive evidence that there was a full-on invasion. Most of the evidence points most likely that they were there prior. They had immigrated there and then opportunistically came to power during unrest. So the Hyksos, they were a foreign group, and their name means rulers of foreign land. And they were most likely West Semitic Levantine people who had previously settled in the region, coming originally from West Asiatic origin. So prior to their rule, there may have been Canaanite groups who had settled in the area during the 12th or 13th dynasty, which those people may have eventually succeeded to power. But like I was saying, like many modern Egyptologists, they reject the idea of an outright invasion by the Hyksos. And it's more commonly believed that they rose to power during a period of general unrest and lack of unification. So the Hyksos, they had a mix of practices and that incorporated Levantine, Canaanite, and Egyptian customs. And most famously, they equated Set to their god Baal Hadad.
Whoa! So now Satan is becoming related to Baal Hadad.
So Baal was a Northwestern Semitic title meaning lord, owner, master, or husband. It was applied to numerous Mediterranean and Near Eastern deities. So, for example, many minor deities of ancient Syria and Persia carried the name Baal, meaning the Lord. And the word Baal still survives even today in modern Hebrew and Arabic as meaning husband or owner of property.
Patrist.
So the Canaanite deity Baal is mentioned in the Hebrew Bible as being the primary god of the ancient Phoenicians. And Baal was most likely referring to Baal Hadad and his local manifestation. So the Hyksos worshipped Set as Baal Hadad, who was a storm and fertility god. So it kind of makes sense how they made the connection. So most likely the storm relationship was that main thread of connection that the Hyksos made between Baal and Set. The biblical use of Baal also refers to the false pagan god of the Canaanites. And it was eventually extended also to refer to any false idols as well. So interestingly, the Canaanite Baal had associations as a fertility god, which, as we know, Set kind of lacked.
Yeah.
And the storm associations between cultures seems a bit confused in the crossover as well, because storms for the Canaanite Baal, they tended to involve rain, and rain provides water for crops, right? Whereas in Egypt, storms weren't the same thing. Storms were more closely related to sandstorms, which were actually chaotic and damaging to crop. Egypt doesn't really get a lot of rain. And then we have tombs in the Avaris area of the Delta, and they revealed that donkeys were buried there during this time, which was related also to Canaanite burial practices. And I think this is an interesting point to note because donkeys had been buried before. When they would bury people, they would often put animals and stuff that could help them in the afterlife in their tombs, right? But the difference with the donkeys that were buried in Avaris is that these donkeys were buried as if they were royal officials. These donkeys were buried not just like, okay, we need some load bearers to help, you know, carry shit in the afterlife. These donkeys were like, they were given nice, you know, like the kind of blankets that they put over them and stuff. And they were buried standing up instead of just laying down like the other donkeys. They were actually buried standing upright.
They even found them buried at Abydos.
Yeah, Abydos, yeah.
Yeah, it was widespread donkey worship in ancient Egypt.
This seems to be what really kicked it off, because like the reverence for donkeys didn't seem to be very prominent before the Hyksos in association with Set. It kind of seems like the Hyksos brought like, hey, donkeys aren't just a load-bearing animal. Like, we relate them to Set, because foreigners also use donkeys a lot, right? They actually rode on donkeys and stuff. And so it kind of seems like the Canaanite burial practices and the way that they treated donkeys carried over like more prominently into this time. And then so there's also a golden bull association of Baal, and it seems to translate into a kind of Set combined with Apis bull imagery. Because as we know, the bull, it's a symbol of strength and fertility, but the Apis bull was typically associated in Egypt with Ra or Osiris or other gods, and not usually associated with Set, though Being a powerful animal, Set was also given associations specifically with the legs of oxen, which symbolized power. But also a lot of other deities had that link as well.
And, like, isn't there a Set constellation that's like a bull's leg?
Well, so Set is kind of considered to be in the leg of the big bear constellation, but I think in Egypt it was actually a bull, and that was the Apis bull, which was usually considered like Ra or associated with Ta or Atum or Min, like any of the bull related male deities. But Set was considered to be like in the leg because he's powerful, right? Where does a bull get its power from? Its driving force is in its legs, right?
Kid Rock
with the radio up.
So eventually the Hyksos went to war with King Amos the First, and he drove them out of Egypt to Shahrihan in Palestine. And that time marks the beginning of the 18th dynasty and the new kingdom, which is approximately from 1550 to 1295 BC. So the association of Set with their foreign god Baal would contribute to a negative association with Set and foreigners in a bad way. But it wasn't set in stone yet, because on the other hand, in the very next dynasty, in the 19th dynasty, there were kings from the same region that positively upheld Set as their family god. So we know that Set worship continued on, but it was like, we're going to be a little bit wary of him in the sense of foreigners.
Right, because they revered him highly, so it's almost like they used him to overthrow Egypt.
Yeah. Even the driving out of the Hyksos was actually, like, credit was given to Set in driving out the foreigners. So there's kind of an apotropaic quality to Set. Like, there were other gods, like how Sobek, the crocodile god, could protect you from crocodiles. So, like, Set, the foreign god, could protect you from foreigners. like
a vaccine.
Right, and that ability to kind of, like, morph, you know, kind of like how we attribute to the devil, you know, to be able to transform and just kind of go with the flow is why, like, this kind of energy, this donkey energy, this ass mentality, it is powerful. It can drive somebody to do some amazing things, you know. That's kind of like the hidden power in nature, I guess, just being like primal, stuff like that. There is some benefit to it. Give me a second, because I'm going to skip that first paragraph there. There's definitely a form of positive stubbornness, but it powers our adversarial nature, or even opposes your adversary directly, because that's the way it works. And it's kind of like a hidden beast inside of us. The Hyksos came from pretty much modern day Syria, and with them they passed through all these different cultures on donkeys, most likely on asses. They brought all this esoteric knowledge down to Egypt, and I'm sure they shared it with Egyptians. And Hekka brought up a good point about nobility continuing Set worship after the Hyksos people left. So it seems like there was definitely an amount of a population of Egyptians who still wanted to worship the old pantheon, because after the Hyksos people left, it's almost like 1,000 years later where another drastic transformation of Set happens, and it's when Akhenaten tried, or he did for a generation, ban worship of all the old gods, and there can only be one god. And of course, he's overthrown, or, you know, he comes out of power. But this god of light was designed to not have any other gods come after him. Like, after him, they went and they destroyed temples and, like, a lot of stuff. You know, this is why there's really not solid evidence on a lot of these things, because of this guy.
Because of Akhenaten and the rise of Aten.
And monotheism, pretty much. This is like the first militaristic version of a monotheistic kingdom with the power to go out and do this and have people willing to do it. Because people's minds at the time must have been swaying. Again, Set was coming. You know, it was like almost at this time, like, this is maybe Set's fault for instilling this crazy, crazy god, this monotheistic, you know, sun god.
Well, it seems like he was more hated by, like, the Amun worshippers that were, like, converting into Aten worship than by the actual people. Like, the Egyptians didn't respond very well at all to Akhenaten's, like, trying to enforce monotheism. Like, it's not that easy to just tell people, like, hey, your spirituality is wrong.
Right, because it's happening at this, like, noble bloodline level, like, and this priestly level of communicating these, like, symbolisms. And, oh, we have the Hyksos culture from 1,000 years ago mixed in here with all this new stuff. And now we're, like, condensing it all and forbidding all that stuff and turning it into a single idea or encompassed in one God.
As we learned in another episode, this is where some of the original Psalms come from in worship of Aten. And then in terms of the Bible, what really gets me is how the Canaanites associated Set with Baal. And then from what we've learned in previous episodes, Baal is what eventually becomes Yahweh.
I think it's really interesting because, like, Baal Hadad seems to be kind of this collective of both Set and Osiris, if you look at what he was actually, like, considered god of. It's like he had both. And if you look at statues of Baal, he looks like he's wearing a crown of Upper Egypt as well, which is pretty interesting because the, you know, Upper Egypt in the north, but Baal worshippers in Egypt were in the south, but Set is associated with the north, right? So It's kind of interesting. He had that kind of crown of Upper Egypt, which is Upper Egypt associated with Set, but you also see that same Upper Egypt formed crown on Osiris as the Atef crown.
It's interesting to think that a god which eventually transforms into the Hebrew Yahweh of the Bible may have had his roots in Set, at least to some degree. Furthermore, it makes some sense why Psi Officer Michael Aquino would co-opt the image of Set and combine it with the golden eagle, because ultimately it's a symbol of state power, force, war, and domination. Likewise, Set isn't just a boogeyman. He has a legitimate purpose, force, and there's been an entire aeon of people investing literal belief in this deity. And if you'd like to hear the rest of the story, where we talk about Set, donkeys, and ancient Egypt, please visit www.patreon.com/theholerabbit, where your monthly donation of just $5 will get you access to our entire library of extended episodes. You'll get a 5x5 vinyl sticker of our cover art, but that's not all. You'll get the secret keys to our Discord chat server, where we discuss magic, pogs, chicharrones, and Satan all night long. Thank you, everybody. Eat carrots, shoot lasers.
Pew, pew, pew.